It's your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC for 20 great years has the best OTR on our live streaming. And continue tuning in to the Radio Book Channel, along with the RTC Music Channel, all at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Welcome to the weekly download. I'm Jim Dolan, your host for this 90 minutes or so of Old Time Radio, and I hope you're going to like it today. We're going to start off with an offering called the Lux Radio Theater. And Lux, of course, was a soap, type of soap put out by the Lieber Brothers. The show lasted until 1955 and came to you originally from New York and Broadway and then eventually moved out to Hollywood with all the movie adaptations they had. We're going to listen to something from 1953 this week. It's called The Birds.
From Hollywood, the Hollywood Radio Theater.
Tonight, we present Daphne du Maurier's startling tale, The Birds, starring Mr. Herbert Marshall. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Don Wilson. Tonight, we're presenting a brand new story by the famous author of Rebecca, Jamaica Inn, Frenchman's Creek, and many other favorites, Miss Daphne du Maurier. Now, this new story, however, is far different from any of these, and in many ways far more exciting. It's a tale I am sure will haunt you for a long time to come. The title is simply The Birds, and our star is Mr. Herbert Marshall. Our scene is London, and the office of a successful publisher of books. With him sits Jenkins, his editor. Before them on the broad, shining surface of the desk is a manuscript, tattered, worn, its bulk held together with a bit of string.
Strange way to submit a story. You say there was no address on it?
No, the author left no address. But I wish you'd read it, sir.
You like it, huh? Do you think it's publishable?
I don't know. It's terrifying. I can't seem to get it out of my mind.
All right, Jenkins, all right. I'll read it. But mind you, it better be good.
Just read it, sir.
Title, The Birds, by John Waite. John Waite. John Waite.
My name is John Waite. I am writing this as a minute record of what has happened thus far because I cannot help feeling that in the recounting of these events I may, in some measure, come to an understanding of what has happened and even perhaps why it has happened. The whole business is monstrous and overwhelming, and I'm not sure that human eyes will ever fall upon this, my journal. I am a writer of moderately successful fiction, and this small house on the Dover coast is my castle, which I share with my wife, my 16-year-old daughter, my mother-in-law, and one yellow canary. The canary. His name is Chippikins. No, I didn't name him. My mother-in-law did. Chippikins belongs to Mother Dobbs, and bringing him here was an open and shut case of Coles to Newcastle. For Dover is alive with birds. And it has been my daily custom, work over, to sit at the cliff's edge and smoke my pipe and watch and listen. The birds, soaring and wheeling in great rushing flocks, flickering in a flat gray sheet just above the grassy slope of the hills, and then bursting all of a bunch, erupting into the sky, restless, ceaseless, ever moving, slashing as one in a perfect arc, up, and then for a split moment, almost invisible, as in their turning, the profile, thin as brass, presents itself against the sky. And then as one, in cadence, back again, and with a slow chorus, gone. Black and white, Jackdaw and Gull, mingling in strange, restless partnership, seeking some strange liberation, never satisfied, never still. Flocks of starlings rustling like silk, and the smaller birds, finches and larks, scattering from tree to hedge and back again. Compelled. By what? And below, the seabirds waiting for the tide. They have more patience. Oyster catchers, redshank, sandaling, and curlew watch by the water's edge, race the surf as it sucks away, revealing the prize. Farther out, the fishermen. Slim, soaring gannets. Ancient, patient pelicans. Black gulls, grey gulls, pale gulls, soaring, sighting, and plummeting. Wings folded. Feet tight in, beats out. Knife through the surface, down in a flash of silver to the prey below. The autumn had been a long one, mellow and soft. The leaves had lingered on the trees, red and gold, somehow reluctant to fall. The days grew hazy and benevolent, shortened imperceptibly. And with their passing, the birds seemed more restless, more driven, more agitated. My neighbor, the farmer, drove his tractor in long, even lines across the western hills, and his figure, silhouetted in the driver's seat, would be lost from time to time in the great cloud of wheeling, crying birds which followed his movements. And I remarked on this. Lots of birds around today.
Aye, there are more birds than usual. And daring, too. One or two gulls came so close to my head this afternoon, I thought they'd knock my cap off. As it was, I could scarcely see what I was doing when they were overhead, and I had the sun in my eyes. I have a notion the weather will change. It'll be a hard winter. That's why the birds are so restless.
My friend the farmer said the weather would change on Tuesday, and he may have been right. I'm not certain. The fact is, the weather changed that night. And it was that night that it began. I've been asleep. What? What's that?
Hmm?
Oh, something at the window.
And go back to sleep, dear.
I'm going to find out what it is. It was a bird. What kind, I could not tell. The wind must have driven it to shelter on the sill. I went back to bed and, feeling my knuckles wet, put my mouth to the scratch. The bird had drawn blood. I supposed it was frightened, panicked, seeking shelter. The wind was indeed very cold. The weather had turned.
John, are you awake?
Yes.
Look at the window, will you, dear? It's rattling.
I've already seen to it, Megan. There's some bird out there trying to get in.
Shoo it away. I can't sleep with that noise.
All right, dear. What? Get away. Out.
What was that? What happened?
They winked for me.
Oh, John, you're still half asleep. Come back to bed.
No, I tell you, they did.
Yes, dear, of course. Come to bed.
What was that?
Mother, and you.
I'll light a candle.
No, hurry.
I opened the door to our bedroom and crossed the landing to the room Jill shared with Mother Dobbs. It was pitch black in the room, and the air was filled with four birds. I could feel them all about me, and I swung my arms. They crawled through the open window. They struck the walls of the ceiling.
Oh, Father!
Quickly, Jill, come out. Mother Hobbs!
I'm under the cover!
Run for the door! I slammed the door after them. I didn't want the birds spreading through the house. Now in the darkness they sensed me and dove for me, tiny beaks and evil claws set to pierce and tear. I seized the quilt from the bed, wound it over my head, and then, swinging a pillow at random, I went to work. I couldn't see what I was doing. But I could feel the thudding of their bodies. I swung till my arm began to numb. How long I fought with them in the darkness, I do not know. A At last, the beating of wings subsided and withdrew. And through the density of the quilt, I became aware of light. I waited, listened, but there was no sound. I dropped the quilt and stared about me in the cold gray light. Dawn and the open window had called the living birds. The dead lay on the floor. They were all small birds. Robins, finches, sparrows, blue tips, larks, bramblings. Birds that ordinarily kept to their own flocks. Now dead and still in a shambles of feathers and broken glass. Outside it was cold, bitter cold. And the earth had all the hard black look of frost. Not white frost to shine in the morning sun, but black frost that the east wind brings. And across the field, the sea, fiercer now with the burning tide, it broke and crashed in the bay. Of the birds, there was not a sign, not so much as a sparrow, nothing but the east wind and the sea.
Do you want the wireless left on?
Please, Mother.
Oh, easy, Meg. That stuff stings.
I suppose, too. Don't want these scratches to infect.
No, I suppose not.
I'd say you ought to thank the Almighty they didn't get in your eyes. That's what I'd say.
Yes, Mother.
Nasty little creatures. One would hardly believe they belong to the same species as little chippikins here. You're a proper little gentleman, aren't you, Master Chippikins? Not a bit like those horrid little savages, That's odd.
What?
He won't speak to me. Speak?
Their bodies filled the sack. The ground had frozen during the night. It was too hard to dig. I went down the cliff path to the beach. The sky was leaden. The sea was flat, calm, oily. Not a sound of birds. I kicked a hole in the sand. And as I did this, I saw them. The gulls. Out there. Riding the sea. What I had thought at first to be sea scud, wind froth, were gulls. Hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands. They rose and fell in the trough of the sea, silent, like a mighty fleet at anchor. To the eastward and to the west, the gulls were there. They stretched as far as the eye could reach in close formation, packed line on line. Somebody ought to know of this. Something should be said. But what? Could I call the police? Hello, constable? I want to report some birds. Oh, no, they think me mad. They think me drunk. Take my report with great politeness and thank me. But they were out there, waiting. Waiting. For what?
Quickly, it's on the wireless.
What?
About the birds.
The Home Office at 11 a.m. today. Reports from all over the country are coming in hourly about the vast quantity of birds flocking above towns, villages, and outlying districts, causing obstruction and damage and even attacking individuals. It is thought that the Arctic airstream at present covering the British Isles is causing birds to migrate south in immense numbers, and that intense hunger may drive these birds to attack human beings. Householders are warned to see to their windows, doors, and chimneys, and to take reasonable precautions for the safety of their children. A further statement will be issued later.
There you see. Wait till Mr. Bell hears that. And just now, down on the beach, I saw a million gulls riding on the sea, waiting.
Waiting? Waiting for what, John?
I don't know. Well, the bulletin said the birds are hungry.
Thank you.
In the shed were all sorts of boards and sheathings left over from the blackout days of the war, and I spent the next few hours putting these up. There was no thought of my novel this day. Actually, the writer is a lazy creature and welcomes any diversion from his work. Somehow this seemed to be something a little bigger than diversion.
Do you think that's really necessary, John?
I don't like to take chances.
But they were such little birds.
I'm not thinking of those.
Oh?
The gulls.
I see. Are you going to do the down the stairs, too?
I think I better.
A bit dark with the windows all boarded up.
At each window, the process was the same. I nailed the boards to the sills from within the rooms. And by the time I reached the kitchen, Meg and Mrs. Dobbs were listening to the wireless again.
The sky was so dense at 1 o'clock this afternoon that it seemed as if the city was covered by a vast black cloud. The birds settled on rooftops, on window ledges, and on chimneys. The sight has been so unusual that traffic came to a standstill in many thoroughfares. Work was abandoned in shops and offices, and the streets were, and still are, crowded with people standing about to watch the birds. We take you now to our roving microphone in Piccadilly Circus.
I've been standing here for hours. We cannot begin to describe the enormous variety of birds which are circling overhead. I have never seen anything like it. Standing beside me is the gentleman... what is your name, sir?
Jenkins, Peter Jenkins.
What do you think of the birds, Mr. Jenkins?
Oh, never saw nothing like it. I swear I never did.
Well, just before we went on the air, you were telling these people and myself about your cat. I wonder if you would mind repeating that for our audience.
Oh, lummy, they wouldn't want to hear none of that.
Oh, I'm sure they would.
Well, I've got these three mouses, you see. Big bully and alley cats they are, hard as nails. And out where I live, the birds keep a wide berth around my cottage. Well, this morning I looked out of the window and saw what we all saw. And I says to my cats, I says, "All right, men, Arthur, Freddie, and you, Leon, out and at 'em." You see, one of their jobs, my cat's job, that is, one of their jobs is to keep the birds scared out of the vegetable patch. So I opened the door and they started out. Then they saw all them birds. And they just turned around with their back hair all up and their tails looking like porcupines. They turned and run into the bedroom and under the bed and wouldn't come out for love or money or the dish of cold water I throwed at them.
Thank you, Mr. Peter Jenkins. Now we have a lady here at our microphone. What is your name, miss? Come on. There's nothing to be nervous about.
What are you doing?
Oh, I thought I'd see if the American stations have heard about it. She
lies. Listen to the mockingbirds. Listen to the mockingbirds. The mockingbirds.
What's that? That's the American's reaction. They never do take a thing seriously.
It seems that we're having a little trouble with our mobile unit. A number of birds have settled on the antenna. Well, can't you chase them off or something? We've got to complete this broadcast. Let's try throwing something at them. I don't know, stones, anything. Ladies and gentlemen, we regret this unfortunate circumstance. I'm sure we'll have the situation straightened out in a moment. Will you please bear with us on this most unusual of all days? And now we'll return you to our main studio for a brief program of recorded music.
Yeah, that ought to hold it.
If you want my opinion, it's all nonsense. That's what it is.
Oh, Mother.
Boarding this place up so we have to light the lamp, and it's only 3 p.m.
Tell me, how much singing has Chippikins done today?
Not a note. He's off his feed, that's what. Look at him. He's so nervous and agitated. What with all your banging? See?
I saw. The bird seemed possessed. He flew from one corner to the other, his shiny black eyes flicking from one of us to another, yellow wings quivering.
John, look out there.
Where?
The ocean.
Oh, you mean that cloud, that big black cloud?
It's not a cloud, John.
It was the gulls. A black mass of them that towered a mile high. They circled thousands upon thousands, lifting their wings against the wind. And they were silent. They made not a sound. They just went on soaring and circling, rising and falling, trying their strength against the cold east wind.
John, where are you going?
I'm going for Jill. I'll wait for her at the school bus stop. You keep the door closed.
I'm frightened.
Keep it closed until you hear me call. Come, Jill, hurry.
All right, but you look so funny. What is it?
Please, Jill, do hurry.
What's that strange cloud?
That's it, tell you what. Let's race the rest of the way.
Oh, Father, you know I can beat you.
Oh, come on, then. Get your shilling.
Wait a minute. Look at the cloud,
hurry.
Father.
Jill, in the name of heaven.
Why, it's birds. Look, Father, birds. And it's coming this way.
Run!
They won't hurt us, will they?
Faster!
Oh, I'm scared!
Oh. Meg! Meg! Open the door!
Hurry! Yes. Quick, Jill! Can you go? I'm holding the door for you, Father! Look out!
Oh, wait! I'm almost there!
The birds!
Wait!
John, there's a gannet above you! He's driving!
Act Two of The Bird, starring Mr. Herbert Marshall as John Waite.
My wounds were fortunately not deep. Had the gannet struck, I would surely have been killed on my own doorstep. The other birds, black gulls, white gulls, and so forth, have pecked and torn, but they were as yet still inexperienced at attacking human beings, and so had done no very serious damage. My preparations have been most fortunate. Throughout the afternoon, the birds assailed the house without luck, and we sat in the kitchen and listened. We listened, and we watched Chippikins. The madness which had seized the other birds now was his, too. He glared at us with malevolent hatred in his tiny eyes, thrust his short, pointed beak at us through the golden bars of his cage, threw himself again and again at the little gate, hoping to break it down.
Oh, I'm afraid for him. He'll hurt himself.
Good.
Poor little man, he can't help himself. He must have caught something from all those awful birds outside.
Turn on the wireless. Let's have the wireless.
I'll do it.
Father.
What?
The school bus. Do you suppose the kids are all right?
Oh, yes, I wouldn't worry about it.
I hope so, Chippikin. Do leave off that, darling. You'll hurt your little self. Yes, baby. Mama's here.
Oh, Father, what happened?
He bit me. Here, look at my finger.
Oh, dear. I'll get the iodine.
And you can leave off that, John Waite.
As you said, Mother Dobbs, he can't help himself. I'm going upstairs and check things. Upstairs it seemed worse. What worried me most were the bedroom fireplaces. They were quite close to the roof, and I could hear many birds which had made their way down the chimneys. Now, with only a thin plywood thickness between them and the interior of the house, they screamed and scratched at the wood. I reinforced whatever I could, particularly on the windows. For wood, I tore the bottoms from the bureau drawers, knocked the panels out of several closet doors, tore down shelves wherever I could find them. And then, deciding it would be too dangerous to hazard a night upstairs in separate rooms, I started carrying down armfuls of bedding to the kitchen. Finished moving things, I locked both bedroom doors. If they should break through the bedroom windows or fireplaces during the night, the doors would hold them for a while. And perhaps in their mad jamming of the rooms, they would smother. Perhaps they would die. At the landing, I piled as much furniture as I could. Made a solid wall of bureaus, tables, chests, mattresses, and so forth. Now, should they break through the doors, they would have this third barrier to assail. But by that time, it would be over. Surely. I regarded my handiwork with some pride and wondered. Outside, I could hear the birds beating against the house. Wings brushing the surface, sliding, scraping, seeking a way of entry. The sound of many bodies pressed together, shuffling on the sills. Now and again a thud, a crash, as some birds dived and fell. Many would kill themselves that way. But not enough. Never enough.
John?
Yes, Meg?
There should be another report in a moment. The man said so.
Good.
Yeah, eat your cheese sandwich. It's good.
No, thank you.
This is London calling. A national emergency was proclaimed at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Measures are being taken to safeguard the lives and property of the population, but it must be understood that these are not easy to effect immediately, owing to the unforeseen and unparalleled nature of the present crisis.
Unparalleled? Get him.
Every householder must take precautions through his own building. And where several people live together, as in flats and apartments, they must unite to do the utmost they can to prevent entry. It is absolutely imperative that every individual stay indoors tonight, and that no one at all remain on the streets or roads or anywhere without doors. The birds, in vast numbers, are attacking anyone on sight, and have already begun an assault upon buildings. But these, with due care, should be impenetrable. The population is asked to remain calm and not to panic. Owing to the exceptional nature of the emergency, there will be no further transmissions on any broadcasting station until 7 a.m. tomorrow.
We had a gramophone. Father, could I have a gramophone for my birthday?
Yes, sweetheart, a gramophone. It shall have the best that money can buy.
Mother, did you hear that?
Yes, Angel, I heard. Now, suppose we all go to bed. It's been a long day.
Wait.
Shh. What is it?
Good old R.A. I wonder what they intend doing.
What was that, I wonder?
Oh, probably a bomb of some sort. I wouldn't worry about it.
Well, I must say, I feel better now.
Mother Dobbs, mind you say goodnight to Chippikins.
I'm not speaking to him, the ungrateful little wretch.
That booming, I knew the sound. The sound of an exploding plane. And I remember tales of flyers who had blundered into flocks of geese and ducks. Bodies that splintered propellers and smashed windshields. And what could pilots do against birds? Suicidal birds. But at least it showed that somewhere in the country they were trying. Somewhere in some small back room at this very moment they were thinking, working. And they would succeed. They had to. Had to. Had
to. John. John, wake up.
What? What is it?
John, they're gone. Listen.
What's the time?
10 o'clock.
10? That means the tide has turned. It's on the ebb. I wonder, Meg, do you suppose it would be that they only attack with the flood tide?
I don't know, dear. What are you going to do?
Where's the flashlight?
On the mantel.
I'm going outside.
Huh? What's happening?
The birds, they're gone, Mother.
Gone, you say?
Yes, John's going to have a look about.
Oh, don't you do it.
And why not?
They're all out there waiting.
Oh, Mother.
Waiting all around the door, silently, for you to open it.
John, do you suppose that...
Well, there's one way to find out. It was a scene of such violent death as few men have witnessed. All about me, wherever I threw the torch, lay their bodies, drifted as snow drifts, as sand drifts. Their eyes bright in death, twinkling in unwinking points of fire. It was silent. So silent. Yet I had the feeling that out there, somewhere, there was life. There was a shovel near the door, and I put it to use. First, I cleared a path from the door to the side of the house, and there I flashed my torch up. Every pane of glass had been smashed. The jagged edges flashed back my light. Many had birds impaled on them. Beyond, I saw the boards. They looked roughened and strange. There were flecks and streaks of blood on the boards, and a fine crisscross of splinters where the thousands upon thousands of bills had driven again and again into the wood. I shoveled the birds up against the windows and jammed them with my hands into the broken panes. Piled them on the sills and the cracks. A futile gesture. With the flood tide, another wave of assaulters would come and drive through these. But it would take time. And we needed time.
John, what are we going to do now?
I ought to go over to the farmers. They've got food there and wood. I need more wood.
Well, you're not to go. I won't let you go. I'll not be left here alone, John.
All right, Meg. I'll wait until morning, until the next ebb tide.
Sorry.
I understand you.
John, what's that?
Where?
On the hill. See? Fire.
It was just next to the spot where I'd spoken to the farmer as he drove his tractor. How long ago? 2 days? 2 months? On the same little hillside. One of the planes, Meg. Come on, let's go back to bed. The second attack was much worse. There was something different about it, something I found difficult to analyze. And while I was thinking about it, I watched the canary. He too had been quiet during the lull, but now he stormed and raged again, beat at the bars of his cage. And I thought of the birds in cages all over the world. Parrots, lovebirds. Peacocks. Yes, and ostriches. What of the ostriches? And the great red flamingos and the big swans in the parks with their powerful wings and beaks.
Father, what's that noise?
Noise?
From the chimney.
I don't know. Let's see. Sounds like they're trying to get at us through this chimney. We've got the fire. Get too low.
John, do something.
Here, give me that can of paraffin oil. Now then, everybody stand back.
Careful.
Back. This will clear them out. That's got it. Jill, you keep the fire up. Don't spare the wood.
All right, Father.
I'll start the promise. We'll have some cocoa.
Good idea.
Shall I check and see what's happening upstairs?
No, Jill. You watch the fire. Keep it blazing.
Poor Chippykin.
Now what?
He's hurt his wing against the bar.
Has he really?
Silly looking man. Mama warned you.
At the head of the stairs, I pushed the barricade aside and listened at the bedroom doors. They'd broken in, and I could hear them screaming and scratching at the thin doors. And with the scratching, I became conscious of a new sound. It sounded like talons. Could the hawks have taken over what the gulls had failed to do? The hawks. The birds of prey. Buzzards. Kestrels. Falcons. I'd forgotten the birds of prey. And as I listened, I could hear the soft patter of thousands of feet across the floors of the bedroom. And the sounds of talons. Of splintering wood. I rebuilt the barricade, descended into the kitchen. The others had not yet noticed that soft patter just above our heads. I prayed that they would not. Outside, the birds continued to dash against the ground, against the walls. Those were the herring gulls, the suicide boys, kamikaze fighters. They had no brains. The black bats were something different. They knew what they were doing. So did the buzzards, the hawks. I thought of the things to do in the morning. There were so many things we needed to withstand siege. A car. If I could hire a car between the tides and use it to carry things. Food. Oil for the stove. Lumber and nails. Sheets of metal for the windows. Oh, so many things. I wondered. And worried. And dozed.
John, it's 7. Don't you want to hear what the wireless has to say?
Yes.
It's 20 after. I can't understand it.
Don't touch the knob. Leave it on the home station.
I thought if I just jiggled it a bit.
No, no, they've made a mistake. They meant they'd go on at 8, not 7.
Oh, now that must be it. Ten after eight, John.
Maybe it's broken.
No, I've checked that. It's working all right.
Birds are letting up.
Shh. I thought I heard something. No, 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 nothing yet.
It's on 9 o'clock's past. There's nothing on the wireless. Nothing.
I know.
What does it mean, John?
Don't you see?
Not even the shortwave. Not even the cold thing.
No.
Birds are gone.
Look at Chippikin sleeping.
Sure is someone, somewhere in the world. Some one of the countless transmitters.
Shall we open the door?
Yes, there's a lot to do before the next flood tide.
Now for station identification.
And now we return to The Birds, starring Mr. Herbert Marshall as John Waite.
A single brief glimpse through the open door was enough. I slammed it and paused to consider this new dilemma. The birds were out there, silent and watchful. waiting. Not a single one flew. They stood across the yard and in the fields, perched on the fence and on bushes and in the trees. All silent, watchful, and waiting.
What are we going to do?
I don't know.
They didn't move, just like Chippikins, every one of them.
Yes. Here, Chippikins. Here's my finger, see? Go on, take a bite.
He won't move.
Is he asleep?
No. No, he seems drugged. Or exhausted.
What are you doing?
Look at them. They're just sitting there. Here, give me that book. There.
It's like they're all hypnotized.
I'm going to the farm.
Then you'd better take me.
Me too, Father, please.
All right. I guess we better all go. There'll be things to carry. Bundle up warm now. It's better cold out there. We went by way of the field. I didn't want to risk the road. It was a strange gray day. Funereal. And the birds all about us. Black and silent and waiting. These were the land birds. Out on the bay, I saw the endless gray carpet of seabirds riding the soft swells of the ebb tide and waiting.
Well, there it is.
Oh, they did have a time of it.
Yes. John, hadn't you better go in alone?
Yes. Yes, I think you three had better wait here.
I want to go with you.
No. I want you to stay and take care of your mother.
Look, John, the cows are unharmed.
And the sheep.
I guess it wasn't them the birds were after.
Oh, poor thing, she wants milking.
Good idea. There are some buckets over there in the shed, Joe. You and Mother Dobbs milk some of the cows.
And I'll come with you, John.
You sure you want to?
Yes.
All right. Here in the yard, the birds sat motionless, watching. And on the roof of the house, and in the trees, and on the sills of the broken windows. Sprawled near the back door, I found the farmer's body. Inside, the place was a shambles. But the larder in the storeroom was intact, and we took sacks of flour and a tub of butter, and sugar and tinned meats. Supplies for a siege. Upstairs, sprawled by the telephone, was the farmer's wife.
I want to try the wireless.
Oh, it's no use. Here, carry these things out of the car. We haven't much time, you know.
We're taking their car?
Yes.
Is it right?
Call it a neighborly loan, if you like.
We'll need more oil for the stove.
Yes, I'll get it. Come on, Meg, we have work to do. The farmer had been planning to build a new silo and stacked in the barn a large sheet of galvanized iron. I found slips, too, and a keg of nails. I was racing against time. The second trip I made alone. This time I was in search of lumber, hardwood. I tore up the flooring in the hall of the farmhouse. There was a bale of barbed wire. I tied it to the back of the car. And as a final, futile gesture, I went upstairs to the telephone. Oh, brother. One last look round. It was growing late. And the final gesture. Man lives not by bread alone. I took their gunophone. As I came down the little lane to our door, I glanced out to sea and my heart stood still. I couldn't believe my eyes. There were ships there. Great battleships. Three of them. The Royal Navy. Throughout the proud history of this isle. in time of crisis. No, I was wrong. The Navy was not there. The gulls were rising from the sea. The tide was turning. Help me quickly. It's time.
All right. Come on, Jill. Mother. Quickly. We'll have to leave the rest.
Yes, hurry. In the house.
The gramophone.
No, not now.
It will only take a minute. Help her.
Oh, here then. You take the records.
Come on. They're coming.
What?
That sound upstairs.
They're in.
Oh.
I'm going to build a barricade at the foot of the stairs.
Can you do it in time?
I've got to.
And at the door. Sound as different there somehow.
Don't worry about it.
All right, dear. Mr. Chippikins, you're an evil little man.
Father?
What?
These are all Harry Lauder.
Really?
Every single one.
Well, now, Jake, it may seem a little old-fashioned to you, but your father and I used to find him right in the cave, and we were caught him.
Did you really?
There was a soft scratching at the windows. This didn't bother me. Those were the small birds. But at the door were the hawks. There I would put up sheets of metal, but that meant nails, and the nails were in the car. Still, I had the snips. Oh, there were so many things to do. Fortifications to erect. A plan of defense to follow. I have done all I can until the next ebb tide. The barbed wire stands in the hall. I intend to nail it across the outside of the windows. I don't think they will be able to get through that. And the galvanized metal is cut to size. And when I get the nails, I will put it up. I am becoming distressed about the main door. The falcons, the hawks, the birds of prey continue to dig at it. But if we can but survive this phase of the attack, we may make out. We have food and fuel for a week. But with each new attack, they grow more intelligent. Their numbers are increasing steadily. When will it end? How will it end? And as I sit here staring at the pages I have written, I cannot help wondering why. Why the Almighty has decreed that this is to be the end.
This the entire manuscript, Jenkins?
Yes, sir. That's all there is.
Well, you're our editor. What do you make of it?
I'm not quite sure, sir. I wish I could talk with the author about it, but as I told you, the story was submitted with no address. I haven't been able to find a trace of John Waite.
Undoubtedly, he's one of those curious, shabby fellows who live in squalor and have great prophetic visions. You know the sort.
That's it, sir.
What?
Prophetic. That's what the story is. Almost a warning.
Oh? In what way, Jenkins?
Well, sir, I think it has to do with nature and her system of checks and balances. You see, what he's saying is that a man, with his ever-recurring wars, his new weapons of destruction, threatens to destroy not only himself, but all forms of life. And nature might find a way to prevent this.
By wiping out man, you mean? Getting rid of him?
Yes, sir. Nature, or the Almighty, call it what you will, just isn't going to allow all life to come to an end. And so, through the birds, It will quite simply take care of the situation.
Yes, Jenkins. Perhaps that's it. Perhaps. Who knows?
And now, once again, here is our star, Mr. Herbert Marshall.
You know, Don, it was a pleasure doing a story as odd as the birds, even though I do think you billed me incorrectly.
What do you mean, Bart?
Well, after all, I was scarcely the star of the piece when you considered the gulls and the gannets. Villains that they were, they ran the whole show.
Well, I suppose you're right, Bart, but after all, we couldn't bill a bird.
Bill a bird, indeed.
you made me say it, Bart, but seriously, you still like birds, don't you?
Oh, of course I do. But now I understand something I never did before.
What's that?
You remember during the war we had airplane spotters, men and women, too, who spent hours scanning the skies on watch for the enemy?
Oh, yes, yes, of course.
Well, tonight I think I've at last discovered what bird watchers are for.
Well, I give up. But anyway, thank you, Herbert Marshall, for being with us tonight.
It was a great pleasure. Good night, everybody.
Radio Theater is a presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
That was the Lux Radio Theater, but as you noticed, they changed the name to Hollywood Radio Theater, and that's because this was a rebroadcast on the Armed Forces Radio and Television Service, and they would take all the commercial messages out. So they didn't call it the Lux Radio Theater, because that would, of course, be referring to the product. And that's why we didn't hear the word Lux Radio Theater. So there's a little radio history in there for you, too. So the birds. And they had a famous movie by Alfred Hitchcock on that subject. And, hope those birds are calm all the time out there. Now we're going to have some comedy to balance things out. We're going to have Duffy's Tavern. And it will be The Raffle. This stars Joan Bennett. And it's from 1946.
It's Wednesday night, so we take it out at Duffy's Tavern with our guest tonight, Joan Bennett, and starring Archie himself, Ed Gardner. Duffy's Tavern is brought to you by Bristol Myers, makers of Ipana toothpaste and Truchet, the beforehand lotion. Two products that will pay you to remember. Ipana for the smile of beauty, Truchet for softer, lovelier hands. Ipana, Truchet.
Hello, Duffy's Tavern, where do you leave meat to eat? Archie the manager speaking. Duffy ain't here. Oh, hello, Duffy. Tonight, Joan Bennett, the woman in the window. Huh? A mannequin. No, Duffy, on the contrary, she's quite a girlykin. Yeah, Duffy, a terrific assemblage of punkitude. What she got that Mrs. Duffy ain't got? Well, take a look at Mrs. Duffy. Are you looking? Well, what you don't see, Joan Bennett's got. Yeah, she just come back from England. England, it's a little place, just a blarney stone's throw from Ireland. Yeah, she went over there with a bunch of other movie stars, sort of a lend-lease arrangement. Yeah, the English sent us their beefs, and we sent them our hams. Well, Joan is coming down tonight to help me raffle off a diamond Tarara. Huh? Well, it's for Christmas, Duffy, to help feed the needy families of Third Avenue. Let them eat cake. Duffy, a certain party named Marie Antoinette once made that same remark. And leave me remind you, after they stuck her head in the guillotine, she talked a lot different. I'll call you back.
Hey, Miss Archer, how many tickets you figuring you're going to sell for this raffle?
Well, Eddie, that depends a lot on how many people buy them.
Mm-hmm. That's a nice round number.
Yeah. Incidentally, what are you thinking of giving your girlfriend, Sonia Jones, for Christmas?
According to my wallet, a matched set of excuses.
Oh, no dough, huh?
That's right. And with Sonia, no dough, no soap. Them women, why do they have to be that way?
Well, Eddie, that's been a problem since time was immoral, you know? Anthony had that problem with Cleopatra. Napoleon had it with Josephine.
You mean Josephine was wallet-minded, too?
You've seen pictures of Napoleon with his hand inside his coat?
Yeah.
What do you think he was holding on to? But she loved him, Eddie.
Yeah, but the trouble is, Sonia never studied history.
Oh.
And Napoleon didn't have the competition I got.
Competition, huh?
Yeah, she got one boyfriend that makes perfume, a jeweler. Then there's another one.
Just a second. If she's got all them boyfriends, why do you bother to give her anything?
Because I'm number three on the list, and I don't want to lose my rating.
Well, why don't you buy one of these raffle tickets? If you win, you can give her the Diamond Torreira.
That's phony hunk of ice.
Well, does she have to know it's phony?
I forgot to tell you. She got another boyfriend that's a glass cutter.
Well, don't leave it esprit your decor, Eddie. By the way, did you get the Christmas tree out of the back room yet?
Yeah, that hat is there in the corner. I hope it don't get arrested for indecent exposure.
Yeah. Don't look as good as it did last year, does it?
No. And last year, it didn't look as good as the year before.
Turned a little brown around the gills. What can we do with it, Eddie?
Well, we could put a fence around it.
A fence?
Yeah. You know what the old saying, that things on the other side of the fence look greener?
Cut the jokes, Eddie. We can fix it up. We'll camouflage it with some of last year's decorations.
Yeah, but what are we going to use to camouflage the decorations?
Don't worry, Eddie. There's a lot of things around here we could use to hang on a tree.
Hello, Art.
Oh, hello, Finnegan. You sold any tickets for that raffle yet?
No, Art. And I've been to every house on the block.
Well, have you been off the block?
Art, for years.
Look, what do you do when you go from house to house?
Oh, well, I knock on the door, and when they open it, I say, I'm Clifton Finnegan.
Yeah. What's the reaction?
The usual. Raised eyebrows and a slight gasp. Then they try to slam the door on me.
Then what do you do?
I use me head on.
Oh.
Yeah. I stick me foot in.
Oh, you do, huh?
Yeah, sometimes. Other times I use me foot and stick me head in.
Oh. How does that work?
Well, that's better. That way it don't hurt so much.
Finnegan, sticking your foot and your head in, I can see that you ain't using salesmanship.
Salesmanship?
Yeah, you see, to be a salesman, the first thing you gotta do is to flatter the people.
Flatter them, huh?
Yeah, you know, for example, when the door opens, you should smile and you say, well, I didn't know a gorgeous creature like you was going to answer the door.
Arch, I tried that.
What happened?
The guy slugged me.
Well, you talked out of turn. That's another thing. You see, the smart salesman lets the other guy do all the talking.
I tried that too, Arch. One place I went into to sell the tickets, it happened the guy was also a salesman.
Yeah?
Yeah, so I was cagey. I laid back and I let him do all the talking.
What happened?
I am now insured against earthquakes.
And not one ticket sold for all of these needy families. Ain't you ashamed of yourself? Now go on out and try it again.
Okay, and this time I won't leave one stone unturned.
Okay, but don't turn over any rocks. You might find a relative. Now get going.
Okay. Hey, look, Art. You mind if I leave one shoe here?
One shoe?
Yeah, it'll help me make change.
How?
Well, tickets are a dime, right?
Right.
So
so in case a guy hands me a quarter, 10 fingers and 5 toes makes 15 cents change.
But Finnegan, you got 6 toes.
Oh, you forget the sales tax.
A human abacus. Go on now, get going. Oh. Hello, Duffy's Tavern. Huh? Oh, yeah, she's here. Just a minute. Miss Duffy.
Oh, yeah?
A phone call for you. Ridiculous as it sounds, it's a man.
No fooling, gee. Quick, give me the phone. Give me the phone.
Steady, old girl. Steady.
Hello? Miss Duffy speaking. I'd love to. What? Oh, it's you, Papa. Archie, you tricked me.
Yeah, but you was really living there for a minute.
What, Papa? Where was I till 3 o'clock this morning? Well, Papa, yesterday was a busy day.
No doubt.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a lot of things to do. Well, first I had my hair curled and...
What'd you do, look in the mirror?
Shut up, you jerk. No, not you, Papa. The other one here. So then I went over to Katrinka Yarbitz's for their housewarming. Yeah, they just got a load of coal in. Well, anyway, the party got going and... You know how it is, Papa. Everybody started dancing with each other, and Katrinka and I got sick of just sitting around, so... Well, so we went to the movies. Huh? Look, Papa, I could tell Mama a few things about the other night when you were supposed to be playing poker.
Yeah, I seen him in that game of poker. The chips was very well stacked.
What, Papa? Okay, it's a deal. We'll both keep our big mouths shut.
Miss Duffy, did you and Katrinka enjoy the movies last night?
No, we had a terrible time. Two fellas sitting next to us did nothing but annoy us.
Oh. So where did the four of you go?
Well, it turned out that they were going our way.
So, naturally, they offered to give you a lift.
Naturally. But we warned them that we were nice girls and they'd have to drive us straight home.
Well, so far, you've acted like a perfect lady.
Yes, but they were no gentlemen.
Oh, they didn't drive you straight home.
That was the trouble. They did.
Straight home. I think I know the trouble. Look, when you got into the guy's car, was it standing under a street lamp?
Yeah, I think it was.
That's where you made your mistake. Now, look, Miss Duffy, Joan Bennett's going to be here any minute to raffle off this terrara for the needy people. And, hey, I wonder if a kiss from a pretty girl would help sell these tickets.
Thank you. I'd love to.
Miss Duffy, the needy ain't that needy. I was referring to Miss Joan Bennett. That's a terrific idea. Joan Bennett kisses the winner. And we'll collect so much dough for the Third Avenue poor people, they'll be coming over here in limousines to thank us.
I'll bet there isn't a woman listening in who isn't interested in trying something different when it comes to making herself lovelier.
You're so right, Mr. Wallington. I am interested. What is it?
Well, it's an entirely different idea in hand lotions. It's Truché, the beforehand lotion.
Truché? And what does beforehand mean?
It means you can use Truché before you get to work, before you do dishes or light laundry, before you put your hands in that hot soapy water.
But what's the point of that?
Because Truché guards your hands from becoming chapped and dry. Why, Truché is so effective that it guards your hands even while they're in hot soapy water.
And how about after I finish the dishes and washing? Can I use Truché then?
Of course you can. Creamy, fragrant Truché can be used as you use any hand lotion. But with Truché, you get something none of those ordinary hand lotions give you. Beforehand protection when you need it most. So why don't you start this new way of helping your hands become soft and lovely? Why not begin today to use Truché? T-R-U-S-H-A-Y.
Look, Eddie. Joan Bennett's going to be here any minute. Now, leave us make the place look Christmassy, huh? We'll put some candles around the tables.
Candles? You trying to put Miss Bennett on a diet?
What do you mean?
Well, if she sees what she's eating, she won't.
Maybe you're right. What could we do to make it Christmassy, huh? I know. We'll take a lot of the Christmas cards we've been receiving and stand them up along the bar.
Be the only thing at that bar that's standing.
Yeah, very funny, man.
By the way, just got a card here you did from Sing Sing.
I did? Let's see. Hey, it's from Rockpile Roach. I didn't know he was still up there. The last time I heard from him, he was waiting for the governor to make up his mind about a reprieve. Let's see what he says. Dear Archie, just a line to wish you a Merry Christmas and a happy. Guess the governor made up his mind. Yeah, well, that shows you, Eddie. Crime don't pay, huh?
Good evening, Archie.
Oh, Officer Clancy, how are you tonight?
Oh, it is a weary man I am. Those Christmas crowds milling around and pushing and pulling.
Yeah, pretty terrible.
Oh, it sure knocks a man out. The hustle and bustle and pushing and shoving. It's enough to drive a man to drink.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, don't just stand there agreeing with me. Do something about it.
Okay, Clancy, here you are. Bourbon and soda. On the house.
Archie, this whiskey of yours is slow poison.
Slow poison? Well, then don't drink it.
Fortunately, I'm a patient man.
Well, enjoy it, Clancy. Tell me, how's the missus?
The old biddy?
Yeah.
Well, as usual. She's been hinting all week for a Christmas present.
Oh, how can you tell?
She's been easing up on her punches.
Well, that's a sure sign she loves you, Clancy.
You're 100-proof right. By the way, that last drink.
Yeah?
Who poured it?
I did.
Who drank it?
You did.
Archie, it's your move.
Okay, Clancy, here you are. Have another
one. Thank you, thank you. Say, by the way, would you like to have Christmas dinner with me and Mrs. Officer Clancy?
Well, thank you. I'll be charmed.
We're having a real Christmas dinner. Celery and olives and cranberry sauce and pumpkin pie. And, of course, for the main dish, the old traditional corned beef and cabbage.
What, Clancy? No turkey?
No, it makes the old lady feel too self-conscious. Oh. Well, I'll be seeing you, Archie.
Okay, Clancy.
Miss Archie.
Yeah?
The woman in the window.
What about her?
She just walked through the door.
Oh, Eddie, that's Joan Bennett. She just got back from England. Talk that pip-pip British stuff to her, Eddie, you know? Give her a real English welcome, huh?
You give it to her. You're handier with that John Bull than I am.
Well, Joan Bennett, welcome back to the motherland. Did you have a good time over there, Joan?
Wonderful.
Yeah, I bet you felt funny driving on the left side of the road, huh?
Not at all, Archie. You forget I'm from California.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Well, how is England? Has the old place changed much?
Were you ever there?
Was I... Just ain't kidding. Joan, I've been up and down the streets of London so often, I still walk cockneyed. Yeah, in fact, to this day, I get sinuses if I ain't breathing that Londonderry air.
Well, what did you do over there?
What did I do? Well, the first time I went over to play cricket for Washington and Lee and Perrins.
You played cricket?
Left crick. Yeah, it was a great trip. A little rough, but very pleasant.
What boat did you go on?
Well, naturally on a boat befitting to a man of my caliber.
A tram steamer?
No, the Queen Mary herself. Great crowd we had on board, too.
A lot of notables?
You mean besides me?
Yes.
Oh, sure. We had nothing but the upper dregs. The Count of Essex and his wife, the Discount. Lord and Lady Windermere. Lord and Lady Taylor. Lord Byron.
Lord Byron?
Yeah.
He wasn't with Lord Tennyson, was he?
Lord Tennyson, Lord Tennyson. Short and stocky, monocle in one eye, stutters a little.
That's the one.
Marvelous shuffleboard player.
Archie, it happens that Lord Tennyson is dead.
What is that?
Lord Tennyson is dead.
Oh. Well, it was a pretty rough trip. In fact, even I had a slight case of mal de mer. You know, that's French for you can't take it with you. Yeah. But where are my manners here? Oh, Edward.
Yes, sir, my lord.
A crumpet of tiffin and some tea for Miss Bennett.
How many spots?
Tuppence.
How much is that?
That's 12.
We ain't got enough for 12 spots. How about just one big blob?
Well, I guess that sounds all right. Okay with you, Joan?
Yes, with lemon, please. In a saucer.
A saucer? How bourgeois. Have you ever tried it with a putrid mug?
No, this will be my first experience.
Well, I think you'll like it.
Archie, I can see you know all about English dishes.
Oh, sure. In fact, I almost married one. But by that time, they didn't let us fraternize. Say, that's a jolly good one. I must remember to send that into Punch. Yeah, Joan, all this this talk about England makes me very neuralgic.
Yes, I'm getting a little sick myself.
Well, in that case, leave us talk about Hollywood.
All right, leave us talk about Hollywood.
I saw that last picture of yours.
I saw that last picture of yours.
You was great.
Leave us talk about England.
Maybe we better talk about the raffle.
What is all this about the raffle, Archie?
Well, you see, it's Christmas, and there's a lot of people that ain't going to be too happy. You know, people that ain't got the kind of dough that you and me has got. And I thought I'd try to do a little something to brighten things up for them. So I'm raffling off this genuine diamond Tarara. The only thing is the raffle tickets ain't going so good, and we thought that maybe if you'd give the winner a kiss, it'd help things. After all, you kissed that Edward G. Robinson. Wasn't even Christmas either.
All right, Archie, if it's for charity, I'll do it. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'll put on my most kissable lipstick.
You're gonna do... Holy cat, she's gonna kiss the winner. But what happens? Suppose the raffle is won by some toothless hoodlum. Some guy that would go after her like she was a free lunch. Archie, you've got to save this girl by hook or by crook.
Say, Eddie, if Miss Bennett is going to kiss the winner, I'll buy a couple of those raffle tickets.
Why, sure, Mr. Warrington. Here they are. You know, if Mr. Archie wins and Miss Bennett has to kiss him, I bet she died laughing.
Oh, boy, I'd like to see that.
Miss Bennett kissing Miss Archie?
No, Miss Bennett laughing. Because if there's anything I go for, it's a beautiful smile, Ed. In fact, I think everybody goes for a beautiful, sparkling smile. That's why we all should try to keep our smiles as bright and as radiant as can be. That, of course, calls for firm, healthy gums. And that means Ipana toothpaste and gum massage. For Ipana is designed not only to clean your teeth, but with gentle massage to aid in the health of your gums. Ask your dentist.
A national survey shows that 7 out of 10 dentists recommend gum massage. Not only that, but dentists themselves prefer Ipana toothpaste 2-to-1 over any other dentifrice for their own personal use.
So why don't you start using Ipana toothpaste and gum massage yourself? It's easy.
Just brush your teeth with Ipana. And every time you do, put a little extra Ipana on your fingertip and gently massage it on your gums.
So get Ipana for your smile of beauty.
Hello, Duffy's Tavern. Hello, Duffy. Huh? Oh, the tickets has been going like wild cakes. Yeah. Well, Joan Bennett's gonna pull the tickets out of a hat And in addition, for charity, she's going to kiss the winner. You won 100 tickets, huh? But suppose Mrs. Duffy found out you kissed a movie star. Oh, you'll throw up to her to kiss in New York that she got from Tom Brenneman, huh? Well, is she there? Well, look, you better not let her hear you talking about kissing a strange dame, Duffy, or your name will be mud. Hello? Hello? So long, mud. I wonder how I could work out this raffle so the charity begins at home. Hello, Finnegan. How many tickets did you sell?
Oh, a bunch of them, Art. Here's the list of names.
Yeah. Finnegan, you got nothing but a lot of X's down here. How can we tell who's who?
Simple, Art. For example, this X here is Mr. Smith, and this X here is Mr. Brown.
But how can we tell which is which?
Oh, it's Mr. Brown is the guy with the glass eye.
Well, put all the tickets in this, put the tickets in this derby hat here, okay. Finnegan, and I'll go get Joan Bennett and pick out the winner.
Yeah, okay, Mr. Finnegan, put him right here in the hat.
Hey, Eddie, I think I'll put my ticket right on top.
You pretty anxious to win so you can get that kiss from Miss Bennett.
Huh? Certainly, what kiss?
Didn't you know Miss Bennett's going to kiss the winner?
I knew there was a catch to this raffle.
You don't want a kiss?
Eddie, that stuff stunts your growth. Me, I'd rather blow bubblegum anything.
Bubblegum?
Yeah.
Mr. Finnegan, ain't you ever heard of the birds and the bees?
Yeah, I heard them. But you give them birds and bees a hunk of bubble gum, and they ain't gonna waste no time kissing either.
Yeah, but what you gonna do if she picks out your ticket?
Well, she won't find it in the hat bin.
What?
I'm putting my ticket right inside the hat bin, and she'll never find it. No dame is gonna make a chucker out of me.
Well, Joan, all set to pick the ticket out of the hat?
Archie, before I do, may I see the tiara?
The tiara? Well, you talk funny. Well, sure. Here it is. Take a look at it. Think? Ever see diamonds like that before?
Only on chandeliers.
Oh. Surely you're jesting. This is the kind of stuff you see in Tiffany's window.
Archie, this is the kind of stuff Tiffany's window is made of.
What do you mean?
Well, look at the back of it. It says Woolworth.
That's the name of the owner. Look. I didn't want to let this get out, but this Torreira happens to come from the private collection of the heiress to the Woolworth Millions.
But isn't her name Hutton?
Occasionally, yes. Look, Joan, you got no idea what this Torreira is worth.
About 29 cents.
That's where you and me beg to differ.
Archie, don't lie to me.
Well, look, well, what's the difference what the winner gets? As long as the money goes to a worthy charity.
But the winner will be disappointed.
All right, we'll cover that. So that nobody gets robbed, I'll fix it so I become the winner.
I see. And I give you the kiss.
You see? Nobody loses.
Except me.
Oh, come on, Joan. Will you do it?
But, Archie, with all the tickets in the hat, how will I be able to pick yours?
Look, I got an idea. I'll stick mine inside of the hat band, see? Then you just reach under and pull it out. Okay, Eddie, leave us start the drawing. Frame, frame, Mr. Melnick.
Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Joan Bennett will now draw the winning ticket in the raffle sponsored by Honest Archie.
And folks, I would like to announce that anybody who bought 100 tickets for this raffle has no more chance of winning than a man who bought one. Miss Bennett will now draw the winning ticket out of the inside of the hat. Have you got the winning ticket there, Miss Bennett?
Yes, I have the winning ticket.
And what is the name?
The name is Clifton. Clifton Finnegan.
Clifton Finnegan?
I was framed.
Finnegan, that rat in Wilkes clothing.
Well, I guess I better kiss the winner, Mr. Finnegan.
Now, you lay off of me.
Don't be afraid. Hold still.
Oh, this is terrible.
What?
To think of all the years I've wasted me lips blowing on soup.
What a waste of osculation.
Well, I'm sorry, Archie. I tried.
Oh, well, forget about it, Joan. As long as the dough goes to the poor people. Well,
Archie, as long as that's the way you feel about it, I think you deserve a consolation prize.
You mean?
Hold still.
Hello, Mr. Archie. There were red knives flying over the Christmas tree.
Mother, you never can tell when your child will come home with a cold. So for that reason, it's wise to always keep a safe, effective cold relief handy in the house. And that means Minute Rub, a really modern chest rub that brings quick, effective relief to cold discomfort. Just rub Minute Rub on the throat, chest, and back. In a minute, Minute Rub's soothing menthol vapors begin to clear that stuffed up feeling in the nose and throat. In a minute, Minute Rub starts to bring a feeling of warmth and relief to those tight, sore, aching muscles. And listen, here at last is a chest rub that's greaseless and stainless. Disappears like vanishing cream and can't stain clothes or bed linens. So get a tube of Minute Rub and get relief from that annoying cold misery the modern way. The greaseless, stainless Minute Rub way. It's time now to leave Duffy's Tavern for this evening, but let's meet here again at the same time next Wednesday. Joan Bennett will soon be seen in the Diana production of The Secret Beyond the Door. Until next Wednesday, then, this is Jimmy Wallington reminding you that for a more sparkling smile, remember Ipana. And for softer, lovelier hands, remember Touché, the beforehand lotion. Ipana, Touché. Stay tuned in for Mr. District Attorney, which follows immediately.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Well, we've passed another pleasant 90 minutes or so in the land of old-time radio, and it's going away, folks, but it's back next week, so join us then, and we'll have some more. Till then, this is Jim Dolan, thanking you for listening.